Scatman's Avenue.
Hey.
Hey.
What'd you think?
About what?
Did you get my text?
Oh.
Hey, welcome back to yet another episode of Did You Get My Text? I'm Patton Oswalt.
I'm Meredith Salinger. Welcome.
Welcome. And thank you for joining two people who are very far apart right now.
Yeah, Patton happens to be in Savannah, Georgia, in what he said is a steam bath of hell.
Oh, boy.
He didn't say that. He just said it was a steam bath when he walks outside. And sadly, he's doing a show down there. But sadly, the wardrobe for him consists of... This is
Civil
like,
War era wool uniforms, big thick beards, a lot of leather belts, high boots, not a lot of breathable fabrics. So there you go.
It's literally the worst when it's boiling hot in the hundreds and it's steamy humid and you're wearing wool suits. I remember doing a show with major, major petticoats and wool suits and wool stockings and a 25-pound bag of birdseed to pretend that I'm pregnant and a wig, which was like the hottest wool hat. It was torture. Literal torture. How are you doing?
Tomorrow I'm shooting. Today I had horse camp. I have equestrian training, so I was out on my new best friend, Bradley the horse, teaching him how to... teaching him who's in charge. We did
Did he tell you that he's in charge?
He did this thing. I was with this trainer and he was like, oh, he's going out of his way. Right. Like at one point we were trail riding and the horse stopped to like put his head down and eat. And the guy's like, you got to pull his head up. He's testing you right now. Cause he's not supposed to be eating while he's trail riding. He's seeing if he can get away with it. You got to pull his head up right now. Like, let him know. No, you'll eat when you get back. So there was some of that, and then at one point the horse stopped and peed for a very, very long time.
was that real steamy?
I'm sitting in 100 degree heat with a cloud of pee vapor rising around me. It was a great way to wake up in the morning.
You FaceTimed me and Alice when you were on your horse, and you had a little helmet on. It didn't look like it fit you.
No, it did not.
It didn't fit
you. I had a little
you.
Helmet on, and I had a little, like, one of these padded vests that also didn't really fit me, so it didn't feel like I was...
What's the padded vest for? If you fall off, you don't get pierced in the chest?
Yeah, if you fall off and you don't break all your chest bones and damage your organs, I guess, so...
Oh, man.
So there was that. So that was fun.
So have you ever ridden a horse before?
Yeah, not like, you know, crazy...
What, were you like 5 serious... years old on a pony ride, or what did
no,
you do?
No, I mean, I've done some riding. I did riding at camp when I was a teenager. I did a weekend one time up in outside of Monterey where it's like this spa and resort, and at one point they rent horses, and you go with your loved one out to a hill, and then they set up a picnic for you, but you ride to the hill on the horses through the countryside. And it's very, very romantic, but...
Was it romantic or was it comical?
It was actually pretty romantic. The horses were very, very tame. We were not galloping through the hills. It wasn't any Man from Snowy River shit. It was very chill tampon commercial horse riding.
Well, I'm glad you did that with someone else instead of me because I used to ride horses. I remember I grew up in Malibu.
When would you ride horses?
Well, there was always, I mean, I grew up in Malibu, like in Topanga Canyon, and everybody had horses. And
like, what age would this be?
I don't know, from like childhood to 14, I guess. Like, there always someone had a horse, and you'd go trail riding, and I used to love it. And then one time I was with my sister and my dad, and the horse bucked her off, and she like fell on a rock, and like cut up her back, and it was awful. And I think after that, I was like, not into it anymore. Just like the time I went surfing over a school of hammerhead sharks, and the guy was like, hey, don't fall. There's a school of hammerhead sharks under you. And I was like, okay, I'm never doing this again.
We're done. Wow.
We're done. Bucking and hammerhead sharks and all that stuff.
Bradley was a very, very mellow horse, and I walked him around, like I walked him with his, held the reins and walked him back into the barn and, like, put him away.
Oh, wait. Sorry. I was just thinking, that wasn't the last time I went horseback riding.
Oh.
The last time, I think I told you about the last time I went horseback riding. The last time I went horseback riding, I was filming a movie in Australia, and I think I told this on the show before, but there were four kids. I was 16 at the time, and we were on horses, and one of the scenes was these four kids in Australia had to round up 600 cattle.
Oy.
And the other three, two of the people were like Australian good riders and everything, but two of us were from America and not.
Uh-huh.
And I did it once, and everything went well. It was terrifying. There were 600 cattle that we had to kind of like steer in a direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time, the director's like, okay, we're going to do it one more time. And a helicopter is going to fly over to just get a good shot from above.
Oh, good Lord.
And my mom, who was on set with me and there to protect me, and she's such a good mom, she was like, you know, I don't think, I wasn't feeling comfortable on the horse. And she's like, I think you got the shot close up. I don't think you need her to be on it while it's a far away shot. So there was a stunt double. So they had the stunt double do it. And when the helicopter flew down, it spooked all the horses. I mean, it spooked the cattle. And they went running in different directions. And the horse that I was on bucked off my stunt double in front of the herd of cattle. And one of the other actress girls actually was a really good rider. And she steered her horse in front of her so the cattle wouldn't trample her, but her horse stepped on the girl's hand and broke her hand.
Holy moly.
Yeah, so that's
why. That's not good.
That was the last time I went horseback riding.
Well, luckily, all I'm doing is practicing for a scene where I ride up to a tavern. I don't ride up in a heat. I'm not going fast. But one of the other actors was out there at horse camp today because he has a big riding scene, and he is determined not for them to use a double. He wants to be riding his horse in this scene where he's being chased through town. So
is he someone who looks like he could be a good horseback rider?
He's learning. I mean, he's very, very confident. He's very determined. He said that yesterday, he was at horse camp yesterday, and the horse was really fighting him all day. And then today, this horse is named Mo. Mo was a real sweetie to him, and they really seem to get along. So he's going, he doesn't shoot until next week, and he is going to go to horse camp basically every day just so that he's totally proficient.
Are you going anymore?
Oh, yeah. I shoot tomorrow, not on a horse, and then Thursday, Friday, I go to horse camp, and also...
I love that you're calling it horse camp.
Well, that's what call it. They call it horse camp, like, off to horse camp.
Yeah.
So
Alice, as one of her activities in life, is also horseback riding, and we called it Pony Posse for her, because she'd get together with, like, a bunch of her little friends. They were all, like, 8 and 9 years old, and they'd be riding really sweet horses. They're little tiny ponies, and they'd go through the mountains in Malibu. And her horse was named Queenie.
But the enchantment wore off on that for her. She doesn't really do that anymore. She kind
of... The enchantment wore off for her, not because... they did it really well. It was sort of like...
Oh, the horse camp was great, yeah.
It was like 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. riding through the mountains and having like a picnic with your horse. You tie up your pony to a thing and they have picnics. They get there, they brush the horse, they learn how to feed, you know, they do all this stuff, wash the horse, do everything. It's not just like fancy, like you go to a barn and they put you on and like teach you how to ride through a ring. Like this is like Malibu style where you
right.
go, you feed, take care of the horses, you have little fairy parties with them in the woods. That's what they did.
So that has been my day, basically. I traveled all weekend, got some shows in, came back, went right into horse camp. Tomorrow I stick on my beard and say my lines.
Oh my
Hollywood!
Gosh. Well, it's very fun that you get to do all these crazy adventures.
Yes. How are you doing? What's up with you?
Everything's great with me. Thanks for asking. I am exhausted. I was gone this weekend as well. It was my 30th reunion from college.
Oy.
And I actually hadn't been back on campus the whole past 30 years. I think I went once. I visited my roommate who lives in Boston, and she was driving me to the airport, and we had like 10 minutes early to spare. So we drove by the house that I lived in. At Harvard, they call them houses, but it's a dorm, basically. And she drove me by there, and so I got 10 minutes there.
What kept you away for so long?
I know.
It kept you away for so long, and now you're back. Why'd you stay away for so long?
Well, this is interesting that you ask, because I was actually on a panel for talking about how in life people pivot, that you have moments in your life that, you know, we all go through struggles and this and that, and a lot of, you know, there's pivoting times in your life, where the panel was about people who were like high-powered executives who became, one person became a Buddhist monk, and mm-hmm. there was another woman who was an economist, and she wanted to be a doula, and all these people were doing these crazy things. I think I didn't go back because, like many people, you know, the perception that you have of yourself in a vulnerable way is, you know, look, I went to Harvard and all of my friends are incredibly successful. One was like head of Goldman Sachs in Hong Kong, and one is head of medicine at Mass General, and everybody has these like very high power jobs. They were all kind of married soon after college, and I was super single, dating crazy, you know, rock stars, musicians, whatever, being ridiculous and free and young and silly, and I'm still acting, but like, you know, there's a lot of time off, and then when people are like, what are you doing? And you're like, well, I'm not doing a movie right now, and then you kind of feel a little bit less than, at least I sort of felt that, which is silly because we all have different paths in life and everybody chooses what career they do, and the career that I've chosen is sort of like that up and down kind of a thing. But I didn't
And you made a living, at a very up and down kind of unsure profession, and lived a really fun life doing it. And if this is just my opinion, but that is a measure of wild success if you can carve out a life like that.
Yes.
Most people cannot do that.
Right. Well, I was very lucky, but for me, it still didn't sort of live up to the expectation of the following of what all my friends were doing. And part of that was because I wasn't married and I didn't have kids. And I met this guy named Patton Oswalt that I married and had I have a little girl with. And I feel there's like a different feeling now that I sort of feel like my life is a little bit more stable than it was so wild before.
I married a third tier comedian, and I thought, you know what? I've really built something here. I'm going to go back and see my friends.
So I did. I felt like I wanted to go back. I feel like I'm in a really good place. There's so much going on in my life right now. And I just wanted to go back, and I didn't just want to go back to see all the people. I wanted to go back and go to the buildings, like the library that I would study in, and my dorm, and the dining hall, which, by the way, looks like Hogwarts right now. I'm going to post a picture on our Instagram.
Those pictures were insane.
Of how Hogwartsy the dining hall looks like. It's just beautiful with stained glass and vaulted ceilings, and it's straight up from Hogwarts. But let's take a little break, and I'll come back and tell you all about my reunion.
We're going to come back. We're going to go into – Meredith has a lot of really cool insights. We'll be right back. We're going to share all those, so stick around.
Hey guys, so we are back, and I was telling Patton about the 30th college reunion that I just went on. I was asked to be on a panel, and we got there, and everybody was sort of interestingly talking about all the ups and downs they've had in their lives. You know, maybe a spouse passed away, or they got divorced, or there, you know, it was interesting because a lot of the people were talking about the differences in energy and attitude of everybody at different points in their life from the reunions that they went to. So the 5-year reunion had a different energy than the 10-year reunion, and the 20-year reunion was like, let me show you all how successful I am. Let me show you all how great I am. And then the 30th reunion is sort of like, let me tell you all the ups and downs, like a very more open, vulnerable thing. Like there was one guy on the panel who has complete success and yet felt like he was doing everything for success and never really took time to look into himself and see what brings him joy. Huh. That part of his success was defined by how well his company did or how many kids they had, who got into what schools, but it was never really taking the time to enjoy yourself. So it was interesting to hear a lot of people talking about the differences in energy between how people presented themselves at the 30th. And I thought that was really interesting, and I'm really glad that I actually went on this sort of authentic moment that everybody was having with each other. And But one of the great things, and I have a good story, one of the great things about the panel, one of the women sitting next to me on the panel was this beautiful African-American woman who was a lawyer. She was talking about her career and what matters to her, and it was all great. And she and I, like, were chatting and becoming friends. And she happens to be Ketanji Brown's college roommate. And wow. For those of you who don't know who Justice Ketanji Brown is, she is expected to succeed Justice Breyer when he retires from the court, the Supreme Court, in the summer of 2022. Once she's sworn in, she will be the first Black woman and the first former federal public defender to serve on the Supreme Court.
Hell yeah.
And if you watched any of the hearings that she had to go through to get nominated, to go through her nomination, she was just put through the ringer, and she's incredible, and she's so bright. So I was talking to her roommate, and she's like, oh, you're going to have to meet
Ketanji. Her hearings, there wasn't that slam dunk moment. Like, she didn't, like, start crying and saying how much she loved beer, which that's how you really nail a Supreme Court seat.
Oh, yeah.
And she also wasn't part of some weird secret Christian cult that where men control all the women. It was a real struggle. It was a real struggle. She didn't have those solidifying moments that you need if you're going to serve on the highest court in the land.
Right, she didn't have that, like, the three-day waiting period to be nominated and then become a Supreme Court justice. She had to sort of go through a vetting process the last three Supreme Courts. Anyway.
And I was just like, if you would just start crying and say how much you love alcohol, but no, she had to take the hard way. She took the hard road.
She had to take the hard way and tell everyone how she started clerking at a young age and really how qualified she actually is. And she calmly had to deal with very horrible, stupid, racist questions.
Oh my God.
And questions that are just gotcha questions and ridiculousness. Anyway, she handled herself with such beauty and grace.
Yes.
So somebody like me and you, who care very much about our country and wanting the world to be a better place, to me, she's my rock star. Like, the kind of people that I look up to in life, they're not your, you know, your average, like, oh, that person's in that movie. I want to meet them. This is more like,
so that's all I care about. Who's in what movie?
Yeah. So after I met her, she and I kept running into each other. Nina, the girl sitting next to me, we kept running into each other. But in my heart, I'm like, oh man, if I could meet Ketanji Brown, I'd be so thrilled.
Right,
it would, like, mean everything to me, because I'm so inspired and impressed with her and in awe of her. And so in the back of my heart the whole weekend, I'm like, God, I hope I run into her. I hope she's even at this reunion. I didn't know if she was there or what the story was. So on Saturday night, here's my story. You guys ready?
Oh boy.
This is really fun. This is the best way to meet someone. On Saturday night, we're all at this outdoor thing, our class reunion thing. There's, like, cocktails and people are, you know, wandering about. And I see that she's there. And I'm with my friends and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, Justice Ketanji Brown is here. I'm so excited. And I was just thinking to myself, God, how am I going to meet her? She's surrounded by U.S. Marshals. Everybody wants to talk to her, but she really just wants to be with her friends.
Sure.
So I'm just like, oh God, I'm probably not going to get a meter. And then I'm walking through, and all of a sudden, I'm kind of near her, but all of a sudden, Nina, the girl who sat next to me on the panel, comes up to me. She's like, Meredith. And she grabs my arm. She goes, let me introduce you to Ketanji. And so she's pulling me over there. Meanwhile, Ketanji is chatting with another group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of standing there. And then all of a sudden, this man who's right near Ketanji, this big guy, he looks at me and he goes, oh, are you Meredith Salinger? And I was like, yes. And he's like, oh my God, my sister and I love you. You're our favorite actress. We saw Natty Gann. He's like, tell me, who's better, Corey Feldman or Corey Haim? Like, he's asking me all these questions. He clearly knew who I was. And then he says to me.
And it turns out it was Joe Biden. Is it going to be Joe Biden? Damn. Go ahead.
And so he says to me, I'm such a huge fan of yours. He said, I am a U.S. Marshal. I'm in service with Ketanji. I'm protecting her. I'm here with her.
Wow.
And he said, And he said, I have a really funny story to tell you. And I was like, what? And he said, when we were checking in for the reunion and she was getting her little badge, the person behind the thing was like, what's your name? I'll get your badge. And he's like, no, I'm a U.S. Marshal. And then he kind of looked over at Ketanji and he said, I should just tell them I'm the security detail for Meredith Salinger. And Ketanji was like, who's that? And then he was like, she's been in this movie. She's been in that movie. Oh, my God. I've had a crush on her. I love her. Like, he did this whole thing. And he kept saying, God, I hope I meet Meredith. I hope I meet Meredith. And so he's telling me this story. Her roommate is right next to me. And then all of a sudden, the roommate, Ketanji's done chatting. And she turns around and Nina is like, Ketanji, I really want you to meet my new friend Meredith. And then the security guy, the U.S. Marshal, looks at her and goes, this is the girl I was telling you about. Oh, my God. And so I'm sitting there thinking, like, how am I going to meet this woman? Oh, and I have two people, like, already, like, prepping her to meet me, which was so – first of all, I felt great because what a great introduction. And I also didn't feel like an idiot, like, hello, I love you. Yeah. I want to meet you.
Excuse me. Oh, that's the great – that's the best ramp up to meeting her.
It was the best ever. I was so happy. And so she and I, because of all that, she and I like stood there and chatting for like a really good 15 minutes. And we were like laughing and chatting. And then we were kind of huddled a little bit. And then her best friend's next to her. So she's like, am I covered up enough in this dress? And then I said to her, I was like, oh my God, I was going to wear my green dress, but it was too boobalicious. And talking to a Supreme Court future judge.
About boobs.
About boobs. But she was lovely and so impressive, and I literally was fangirling, and it was the highlight of my time just because such a star.
That's such a great little moment. And then once you got to talking, you must have had all these common experiences about what house were you in? Oh, I remember, like, did you have friends in common? Did you have people that you both knew?
No. The interesting thing about her is her entire roomie group, they all were like these amazing women who were that became lawyers. Like, how did she get like her perfect little group of girls?
Right.
Yeah. So she's actually like the most beautiful. Her smile is the most genuine. She's the most beautiful, clearly beyond brilliant, clearly open heart. Just, it was magnificent.
Well, it sounds like she was also in like a serious brainiac clique. College. Total brainiacs.
But everybody's sort of, everyone has their own level of brainiacness.
That is true. That is true.
But it was really wonderful.
That's exciting.
And here's the other really exciting thing. I feel like I want to say one thing about the Harvard thing. It's really interesting because there's always that thing of like when you go to Harvard and someone says, oh, what school did you go to? That everybody's sort of cagey about it, like, oh, I went to school in Boston. and then they're like, well, what school? Boston University. And you're like, oh, no, I actually went in Cambridge. And they're like, you know, it's so annoying because clearly you're spending too much time trying to be modest.
Right.
And you're making it worse. You sound like a fucking asshole.
Just go, I went to Harvard.
Just go. So that's my thing. I just go, I went to Harvard. And I worked really hard. I studied really hard, and I really want – it was such a great experience. And I don't want to, lessen it and act like it's not such a big deal. It was wonderful, and the people there are so wonderful. And anyway, as I was leaving, I wanted to get Alice a Harvard sweatshirt, and I was telling – you know, all my friends were like, oh, getting their kids sweatshirts and stuff. But I also got myself a Harvard sweatshirt, and I got myself a little Harvard hat, and everybody else is like, only you, Meredith, only you are the one who's going to be just loud and proud about it. And you know what? Fuck that. Yes, I am, because I feel like – and there's so many fabulous schools. I feel like people should be proud of their education if they get the opportunity.
Be true to your school, man. Yeah,
be
proud of it.
Be true to your school.
Be true to your school. Now, here's what I want to know. You know I'm dying to ask this. How is Ted Kaczynski doing? Was he there? What's he up to? What is he up to?
It wasn't his reunion year, babe.
Oh, God damn it. Because his Facebook profile is gone.
His manifestos have really gone viral.
I remember we were talking. You were showing me your book of all the people that, you know, you were going to go see. And because they send you that. What's it called? It's not the Facebook.
The freshman Facebook. Facebook is the pictures from freshman year that you get. And then the red book is the report, the annual report. And so everyone sort of makes an entry into the annual report, so you kind of get a sense of, you know, what people are doing.
we were looking at Ketanji Brown's, and she had clearly submitted her report, her entry, right before she got the nomination. So yeah. It was like she had just gotten some, and it was still a very impressive, like a district court judge. And
she had just been promoted to some great position in some court.
D.C. District Court.
She wrote it. But she didn't realize she's about to be nominated for the Supreme Court, which is so charming.
But I remember telling you, if you do meet her, like, I was reading in the Red Book, you got nominated to this district court. Wow, what is going on with that?
You must now, feel so proud.
Is anything else going on? I mean, you've hit the plateau. Like, you've hit the peak, right? Like, what are you...
So, and there was one other thing. Well, I know you told me to go to the Harvard Lampoon because they honored you for something, and that your banner is up in
the
Harvard Lampoon.
There's a banner. Yeah, there's a banner.
Well, I wasn't a member of the Lampoon, so I didn't. I mean, I guess I could have gone in and looked and asked, but...
You couldn't charm your way into the hall?
No, but I will tell you, while I was at school, at the time, there were only men's final clubs, and those were basically our fraternities, but you didn't live there. They were just like nice, beautiful old buildings where you would have dinners and parties and you could congregate and play pool and study and do all those things. And it was just for the men. Mm-hmm. And you had to be invited to go to those clubs if you were a woman. I was lucky enough. My boyfriend at the time was in one of the final clubs. So I spent a lot of time there and it was wonderful. And my junior year, there was a girl named Kristen Silverberg and my friend Gretchen Crosby and Leslie DeBoge. They were like, they didn't say what I'm about to say. This is bullshit. We need a girls club. They didn't say that. They just said,
awesome.
They didn't say that. But but they said, let's start the first girls club. And so the six of us, because there were two other girls, I can't remember their names. We started the very first all-female club at Harvard, and it was called The Bee. And we named it The Bee because in the old days, historically, women were not – I think I'm getting this right. If I'm wrong, somebody please write in and let
me
know.
I'm sure we'll get a speak pipe about it.
Historically, you were not allowed to gather in the old days, like in the 1800s, because they didn't want women talking about politics. And sometimes they said if you live more than six girls live together, it's considered a brothel. These are all like really antiquated thoughts. But women in the 1800s would have sewing bees, and they would get together to under the guise of sewing.
Yeah.
But really, they would be talking about politics of the day and all that kind of thing. So when we started the first girl club, as an homage to that historical context, we called it The Bee. And still around to this day.
Hell
and
yeah.
And they finally bought their own building on campus, and I went to visit it. And at the very top of the stairs, there is a picture that says of the first bees. And that's me and the other five girls who started the club.
Wow.
And I felt so proud because that's pretty historic to start the first all-female club. Now some of the clubs have gone co-ed. They're coming up to the times and being more progressive. But anyway, it was pretty spectacular. And I felt really chuffed and proud of myself. And I wanted to tell you all of that because I thought you'd be proud of me.
That is so sweet. Well, you know what? On that, we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. We'll be right back, huh?
Oh, see what funny, I,
because,
funny boy.
All right. See you in a second.
Be back. Hey, everybody. We're back. Patton. I love you.
Thanks, sweetie. I texted you a quick thing from. I'm really starting to love collecting these. This is the second one. We spoke about one of these a few weeks ago, where a police department will post a picture of drugs on the table for a drug bust.
Yes, they love it.
Normally, when a police force does this, it is a long table with bales and bales and bales of cocaine and guns lined up, and look how we've protected them. But every now and then, a smaller police force, I guess they want to be part of it too. A few weeks ago, a guy, this Ohio policeman, I think he literally busted someone for like three joints and had a picture of the joints. Well, Canada is into it now. On Wednesday, two U.S. citizens returning from Canada had their vehicle examined by Champlain CPB officers. The inspection led to officers seizing ecstasy, marijuana, and psilocybin mushrooms in raw form and infused in a chocolate bar. And they have a picture of their drug bust.
It's like
it's like
so small.
It's so tiny. And there's like, it's in one of those like film canister sized thing. Like this is barely enough to get two people high for an evening. Like barely. And it, but there's something so desperate and sweet about that. Like we're protecting you. And also they're hoping to get kudos from the dummies in the community that really think that that is a major arch criminal that they just took down. Whereas it's two people that were, that, by the way, two people that probably forgot they had that on them. Like, oh yeah, that's right. We were going to do that at the concert this week and we totally forgot. Okay. Do you want it? You
can have it. How did they, if it's in chocolate, if it's psilocybin in chocolate, how are they smelling this stuff?
I don't
and
know.
And warning to anyone listening.
But a warning, yeah. Warning, do not travel, do not cross the Canada border with enough psilocybin to get you through maybe half an episode of Stranger Things. Like,
yeah,
do not
three
even
of your friends. That's it.
With
just
three of your friends. It was the tiniest bust I've ever
literally
seen.
It was like, it was basically like three joints and like a little thing of mushrooms that were so small you can't even. Oh, my God. So but it's hilarious.
Yeah, and I'll always be on the lookout for stuff like this. I don't know why it makes me so happy. And if any of you see stuff like this, you can email us pictures of police forces posting pictures of their quote-unquote drug busts.
They may as well have posted
a picture of, like, a packet of Sweet and Low. That would have been a bigger drug bust than this picture that they put up.
Oh, my God. I don't want to bring the room down or anything like that, but I just read an article about fentanyl and how literally like a sugar packet size of fentanyl could kill like 10,000 people.
Jesus.
Like, it's be careful out there, everybody. Schools
yes.
are sending emails to parents talking about the fentanyl crisis.
Damn.
And kids, one of my best friends was just at the skate park with her kid. And she saw two teenagers like smoking pot or something. They dropped to the floor, blue, and the emergency ambulance had to come get them. These two kids, there was fentanyl in their joint. They didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's insane. Anyway, sorry, that just ruined everybody's day. Hey, everybody, we are going to take a break from all that insane drug talk and listen to some of your speak pipes and answer them because you guys are cool and fun and we want to interact with you. So let's go.
Hi, Patton. Hi, Meredith. My name is Natalie. I'm from the Central Coast of California. And I was saying, when talking about that list of amazing lead singers, a name that has to be on there, and, you know, she's female and there were no females on the list, but one is Annie Lennox. Amazing. She's got to be there. Second, I know you give us amazing picks, so I thought I'd give you an amazing pick. So I'll tell you what I like, what I really, really like. And that is a podcast series by Chris Lambert. It's called Your Own Backyard. And it is about this murder case of a Cal Poly student. And the creator, Chris Lambert, really worked so amazingly hard to bring this case back to life. And he does such a beautiful job honoring the family and just really protecting her legacy. So check it out. And also a book series by Frederick Bachman called Bear Town. And it is about this hockey team and the town that's filled with chaos and love that supports it. It is just so beautifully written. So check it out.
Wow. Those are great recommendations. That sounds like a more modern version of Slapshot, which is one of the greatest sports movies ever made in terms of chaos and violence, but also heart. Wow.
I love getting a recommendation from our listeners. We need that. Patton has his own fun things that he's into, but it's always fun to get like a new direction, new perspective.
Yeah, and that, yes, she is absolutely right about Annie Lennox. Annie Lennox and Pat Benatar both are examples of rock singers who are also operatic in their, I think Pat Benatar trained as an opera singer when she was young, which is why she was able to hit those insane highs and ranges in songs like Heartbreaker. So yes, absolutely Annie Lennox. What an amazing vocalist.
I'm so obsessed with Annie Lennox. I love her so much. I would sing her record at the everything from the Eurythmics to just her by herself. Mm-hmm. And there was a time, I think I was in my early 20s. I think I just graduated from college. Maybe I was younger. But we were represented by the same agent. And I wanted to do a live action version of Snow White. And I wanted to be Snow White. And I wanted her to be the evil queen.
Oh, hell yeah.
And we were actually in talks to do that. And yeah, that never happened. But how cool would she have been as the evil queen? Shit. She's so beautiful.
It's amazing that I don't know off the top of my head if she's been in movies, but what a face! What those eyes? How has she not? She would have been amazing in film. But I bet she's like, I would just rather sing with a voice like that. I'd rather just spend my time singing songs. My God.
Amazing. And also, I just want to say, I want to comment on one of the things she said, which was she was adding to our list of people who should be on a list. And it's so funny because somebody on Twitter the other day was like, who are your top five comedians? Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I'm like, you know, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, Mitch Hedberg, Patton Oswalt, and people are like, what do you mean? You don't have so-and-so on that list? And people get all riled up. I'm like, look, dude, they said the top five. If we're going to keep going, I could list like literally 99 more. We got Sarah Silverman. I mean, there's like a million people I would still put on that list.
Also, but they said top fucking five. List. It's my list. Yeah. What do you care? By the way, even if they were, there's only five. It's my fucking list. Make your own list. They just act like because you chose those five, no other comedian gets to do comedy anymore. Like, no, that's just my list.
Like, well, it's fine if they're like, oh, yes, love those five, and also. It's more like a yes and would be a better response, but it's like, what about, why did you leave him off? He's better than him. Anyway, do you know, baby, I put you on my top five list of comedians.
That's a great company to be in, those other people you named. Holy crap. Thank you.
I think you might have been number four. I wasn't doing them in order, though.
Yeah, but I would not put myself above Mitch Hedberg any day.
I wouldn't either. No. I love him so much.
Fuck, he's
my favorite. He God, is my good. Favorite. I love him so much. That was a great question. Thank you. And call. Thank you so much for calling and leaving a speak pipe. Let's hear another one.
Hey, friends. Lisa Sky here. I am coming at you from Los Angeles. I'm kind of new here. I moved during the pandemic. And I'd love to know your hot tips for L.A., I'm a performer and producer myself, but I'm kind of keeping the question very, very broad. Just anytime anyone you hear someone's new to LA, what are your kind of go-to hot tips for Los Angeles? Also, last episode you said the term prostitute a few times. It's kind of regarded as a slur. The preferred term is sex worker. I know it's super hard to swap out one term for another, especially if you've been using it for many, 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 many years. But I'm sure a lot of your listeners would appreciate it if you tried to swap them out. But anyway, love the show. Hope you are both well. And I can't wait to hear your hot tips. Bye.
Wow.
Lisa, thank you for the call. Really exciting. Loved your voice. Loved your question. Actually couldn't understand half of it, but I'm glad you asked those questions because everybody who comes to Los Angeles asks those questions. I have some of my own go-tos. Patton, I'm sure you have some of your go-tos. I'll say my number one first go-to, mainly because I'm born and raised in Malibu, is to go out to Malibu and go to the Getty Villa, the Getty Museum, and take a walk through the beautiful museum. It's stunning. And also then, of course, the new Getty Museum, which is up on the hill. I'm big into museums. What about you, babe?
I mean, my hot tip for a place to go for me is, of course, the new Beverly Cinema on Beverly Boulevard, although in a weird way that's counterintuitive for what it sounds like she wants to do. It sounds like she's looking for connection and expansion. The new Beverly is about retreating from the world and sitting in the dark and watching movies, which is what I did, but it paid off. If I don't know, she said performer, producer, this is going to sound kind of... I hope this doesn't sound glib, but start performing and producing. There are a million black box theaters all over Los Angeles. There are a million people looking to do things. Find a theater group, find a writing group, join an improv group. Just start going places where people are doing things, and it's all kind of connected, and it will lead you to something that you should be doing.
Right. So places to go, like the improv, the Comedy Store, then the little theaters around town. There's a Geffen Theater. There's the Hollywood Bowl has a lot of amazing performers.
But even like smaller theaters, like in the Valley, yeah. There's, you know, the Blue Banshee. Just any kind of small or also, I guess, look on people now are just when they make indie films, they just advertise on Craigslist or Facebook, hey, I need this. I need you to come out for, like, you can just start showing up and working on things if you
get out there. I guess I was giving her more the tourist, yeah, the tourist, yeah, kind of places she should go. But
well, you got to get a hot dog at Pink's. I mean, that's the first thing.
You got to get a hot dog at Tale of a Pop.
Oh.
Oh, wait, no, Tale of a Pop doesn't exist anymore.
Anymore.
You got to get you got to go to Hot Dog on a Stick.
Oh,
they have corn dogs and they have cheese dog, and it's by the beach. It's by the pier. Go down anyway. There's millions of places in LA that are great recommends.
And then as far as swapping out terms, I did not know that prostitute was considered. I thought prostitute was the more polite, respectful version of saying like hooker or whore. But I guess
right, it is. But then now you call them sex workers.
Sex workers, yeah.
Just like you don't say stewardess, you say flight attendant.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, they're sex workers, and also, I think when you say, isn't prostitute like you're implying a gender almost, whereas sex worker is, you know, there's people of all shapes and sizes and types and kinds it's a
job.
Work. It's a fucking job, and
I don't know why it's not. I mean, I guess it should be legal.
I mean, it's legal in it's all not legal. But I mean, no, it's not legal. But I remember somebody, I met that woman down in Atlanta who ran a quote unquote brothel, but it was a website, and I was so naive that I thought, you can't have a website, because wouldn't you get busted, like, if it's just on the web?
And but they don't call them sex workers, they call them escorts. And
it was like enhanced escorts or something, like, because of the terminology she used, it wasn't illegal, and I said, that's amazing. So that felt really
I was
cool.
So naive. There was somebody, I saw an ad a million years ago, like, there was an escort, and he just needs someone. There's a man who just wants someone to go to a nice dinner with him. And I'm like, what's wrong with that for like all that? Man, that's pretty fucking cool. And then I didn't realize that. I was like, that's a cool job. Like some bored guy needs someone to talk to at a restaurant. Like, hey, welcome to LA. Let me tell you all about it.
Yeah.
Nope, not
the actual thing. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Didn't realize. By the way, did I ever tell you that story when I did Natty Gann and mm-hmm. I was at a video conference, and they were selling, back in the day, VHSs and videos, mm-hmm. and I was in the kids section,
right.
And I was signing autographs for The Journey of Natty Gann, and someone came up to me and said, some of the actresses in the adult section want to meet you. Can you come take pictures with them? And I was like, oh my God, like Meryl Streep? Like Julia Roberts? And I thought, like, I'm a kid, they're adults. And so I went to the adult section. No, it wasn't them. It was Porsche and Mercedes doing their porn. They were shopping their porn tapes. I didn't realize the adult section meant, adult films. Like, I was a kid. I didn't know what that meant.
You could have burned your Disney contract to the ground on the spot.
I actually did. I took a picture with a girl named Mercedes and a girl named Porsche.
Back
in, like, 1985 or something like that.
Oh, Lord.
And now they're just... film stars, porn. Do you call them? Yeah.
Porn. I guess they're just or adult film actors or adult. Yeah. I mean, what would they call them?
Yeah, adult film actors.
I guess so. Huh. I didn't know what. This is not on that same level, but when OnlyFans started, I didn't know what it was. I just
in my mind,
OnlyFans is a site where I think people can post their own. It's like you charge people subscriptions to then get your nudes, basically. You post your nudes, or men and women have OnlyFans pages.
How some guys have a fetish for feet?
Mm, oh, yeah. And yes, exactly.
Well, I would say, of all my qualities, I could have been a foot model. I have the prettiest feet. Yeah. And if there was an OnlyFans thing for just people to look at your feet, how hard would that be?
Put a camera on your feet? Should
I have an OnlyFans page for my feet?
Well, there are different categories, I think, on OnlyFans. But when it first came out, I heard the term OnlyFans, and I thought it was for...
It's only for your fans.
Well, it was for... Yeah, only for your fans. So I was talking to a musician friend of mine. They were like, yeah, I'm having trouble, you know, like booking dates. And I was like, you should start an OnlyFans page. And she was like, what? I go, yeah, just put yourself online. And then someone had explained to me, no, it's that's a porn site. I'm like, oh, I thought it was you put anything you want.
You thought it was
there.
Like a Patreon. You thought it was like a Kickstarter or a Patreon.
I thought it was like a new Etsy type deal. Like Etsy and Patreon and Substack all together. I didn't understand. It took me a hot minute to go, oh, that's just for porn.
Yeah. How would you feel about me having like a foot page where they just have a camera on my feet?
Well, wouldn't you have to have it identified as you, as part of the thrill? Like, oh, this is that girl from that movie. This is her feet. Or would it just be feet, but it's not you? Is it anonymous?
Well, I mean, I would imagine you could, like, do a selfie and start and be like, hey, guys, and then pan down and just be on your feet the whole time.
Come check out my feet.
I mean, what's the kind of income you can make? What if I had a little side gig of, like, feet fetishists who are paying?
I don't know. There's a guy, there's an OnlyFans actor who, there's this great video where he goes home. He has a, like, a bag and has 20 grand in cash. He goes, just got my first OnlyFans payment for my site. And it's 20 grand. And he's I'm going to go pay off my sister's student debt. And then he kicks the door in. And his mom is like, God damn it. What the fuck? And he kicks her door. And she goes, Jesus. And he just throws this bag of money at her. She goes, what the fuck is this? He goes, I just paid off your college debt with my dick. And then they cut to, she's like hugging him. She goes, thank you, but this is so weird. Like she's crying. It's really amazing.
Oh, and someone said, sweet and horrible at the same time.
Yeah. Someone said, this is the definition of chaotic good. Like people go, what is, in D&D, what does chaotic good mean? This is chaotic good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Let's hear our next beat pipe.
Hey there, Meredith and Patton. This is Kirk Nordenstrom from Seattle. I'm the host of the 48 Hour Heroes podcast about the 48 Hour Film Project. And I have a quick question, but first a quick comment. Thank you very much, Patton, for keeping my buddy Derek Sheen busy and out of trouble. And second, the actual question is, you have a bit on one of your specials about living on the Lower Haight at near the corner of Mug Whitey and Stab Whitey. And I suspect that at that time, you and I lived very, very close to one another because I lived near the corner of Page and Webster in 1993. Oh, wow. And used to go to the Horseshoe Cafe all the time. And I'm just wondering if we lived really close to each other in 1993. Love you too. Love the show and looking forward to more episodes.
Yes, we absolutely lived very close to one another in 93 because I lived at Pierce and Oak in the Lower Haight and would often walk down to that self same horseshoe to the Spaghetti Western, rest in peace, to the Mad Dog in the Fog. I think it's still there. And to the wonderful, which I introduced Meredith to, Kate's Kitchen. Amazing breakfast spot in the Lower Haight. They do crazy heavy breakfast foods. We went there once with Alice and once with ourselves and then walked from the Lower Haight up to the Upper Haight. But that was the breakfast spot we used to, that we would go to all the time, Kate's Kitchen in the Lower Haight. I'm sure we passed within inches of each other because if you went to the Horseshoe, that's where I spent my days sitting and writing and slugging down caffeine. So absolutely, we must have seen each other. There are moments, and if life after death is a defending your life situation, they can rewind the film of our life and see where we probably stood in line together to get a soy latte. There you go.
You know how you were just saying, if you like replay the story of your life, maybe you were. You know how you see sometimes those pictures of people like a husband and wife who like when they were little, they were in the same picture, but like find themselves. And the craziest thing is. Your wife, Michelle, was best friends with my best friend since seventh grade, JJ. After college, JJ was best friends with Michelle. I didn't know Michelle, which is so crazy because we had so many friends in common.
Yeah.
But at JJ's wedding, I think she was at her wedding and
I'm sure she was at her wedding. I know she was
and
there.
So I've said to JJ, I was like, you have to look through all the pictures. Like, were Michelle and I in the same photo? Like, was she behind me? Was I behind her? And any? So we're on a mission to hopefully find, because it would be so amazing if we had been in the same, it would have been so cool if we could have met.
And It was a surprise wedding. The husband basically said, he proposed to her at the airport, and then she said yes. And then he goes, then we're going to get married right now. And he had this all pre-planned.
This is how it went down.
Oh, tell me.
They'd been dating. They'd been together for a long time. He said, they were living in New York. He said, I need to do some work in Los Angeles, where JJ lives. And he said, will you come with me on this business trip? It's just a couple days, and then we can go to Mexico. And she was like, oh, okay, let's do that. So she flew with him. When they landed in Los Angeles, he said to her, will you marry me? And she was like, yes. And he goes, okay, your sister's picking us up right now. She's going to take you back to her house. Tonight is our rehearsal dinner. We're getting married tomorrow. And so JJ went back to her sister's house. There were 10 dresses waiting for her and a tailor. She picked one of the 10 dresses. We all the friends, all the high school friends, everybody went out for a rehearsal dinner that night. And the next day, they had their wedding. He surprised her. Everybody else knew about the wedding. All the friends and family were already prepared to go.
I know that you and JJ are going through the pictures. She should contact all of her friends who were there and go look through any picture you took, because JJ wasn't like prepared, you know, to have like, so you've really got to sift through the evidence of all the friends that in every photo that got taken. I'm sure.
It just would have been really cool.
Yeah, exactly. That is amazing.
Yeah. But my favorite part is that you married Michelle, who was best friends with JJ, and you married me, who was best friends with JJ, and clearly you picked nice people.
Well, my type is smart girls. That's my turn on. It really is. Sweet. It just is. You got to be smart, god damn it.
Smart, but also like mellow, down to earth, and kind. Like, you don't want a smart, annoying person.
No, good lord.
Like, well, actually, the temperature.
You have that. You're 1 month off on that date, sir. Okay, so there's a couple. We got four emails. We're going to read two of them. We appreciate all of your emails. Some of these emails are just like, "Hey, I love the show. Thanks." So thank you. Doesn't really spark discussion, but thank you for these. This first one is from P.E. Just P.O. Paul Etcheverry. Paul Etcheverry. Huh. And he writes, how did I miss this Sonic masterpiece with cover art by Chris Chapin? There must be a Chipmunks Terry Riley album. Must scour the used record stores, whichever ones are left. Thanks for the comedy and the podcast. What is he talking about? Well, I'll tell you what he's talking about. My friend Chris Chapin, C-R-I-S, last name Chapin, S-H-A-P-A-N, one of the funniest graphic designers. He does all of these. If you watch Hanging with Dr. Z, he designs all the fake ads that Dr. Zaius is in for Jamie Farr brand salad dressings and the Tor Johnson liver and onions restaurant. And he really knows fonts and stuff. I'll send you a picture of this. This is Alvin, Simon, and Theodore, the Chipmunks, with Dave Seville doing Koyaanisqatsi. So it's the Koyaanisqatsi album, but done by the Chipmunks. And it's, I'll send you the cover. Go search out Chris Chapin stuff. The man is a friggin' genius, and I love him. So that was a nice little call out to my friend. And then this next one, the subject, the College of William and Mary in Virginia. Hello, Meredith. My name is James. Everyone calls me Mike. I listen to Did You Get My Text?
Wait.
I know.
My name is James and people call me Mike. That's a weird one. Okay,
it is weird. Mike Boeck. But his name is James, but call him Mike, please. I listen to Did You Get My Text every week, mostly to hear your bright and sunny voice. Aww. You are as pure a delight as I hear these days. Do not ever change. That said, this email message is more directed towards your lesser half. Wow. He's really,
I love you, Mike.
He really is like, he loves a caste system here. Hello, Patton. Big fan. See what I did there? Yes. Mike. Or should I say James? My name is James. Okay, we got the joke. I attended the College of William & Mary in Virginia from 1981 to 1985. Apart from a degree in economics, a minor in government, and sequencing in philosophy, I don't know what that is, I worked at the Greenleaf to pay for food and DJed at WCWM when the studio was at PBK Hall. I also DJed there. Among the people I met there were John Leibowitz, a guy on the soccer team who I handed a roach clip to at a quad party and who later had a daily show on TV after changing his stage name. He's talking about John Stewart. My freshman year roommate...
John Stewart?
Went to my college as John Leibowitz. He changed his name to John Stewart when he went into comedy. Yeah, he was a William & Mary grad.
I think it's a good school.
And a star soccer player.
John Stewart was a star soccer player?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was an amazing soccer player. My freshman year roommate, Big Doug from Great Neck, who later wrote and directed episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Hey, I was in that.
Which I'm wondering if he wrote one of your episodes. I'll have to look that up. And Mike Powell.
He didn't.
Oh. Who later was commissioner of the FCC that regulated all those TV shows. His father was some guy named Colin. Oh, Colin. He's being a little clever with this. He also went to school with Colin Powell's son, Mike. And Julie O'Neill, who I dated briefly.
Okay, is this a good email? Are we just listing all the people we know? What's his question?
I don't know what he's doing. His father was U.S. Treasury Secretary. Okay, Tip O'Neill. Got it. But the best part was later going to law school in Athens, Georgia, from 86 to 1990. I played drums in rock bands, knew everyone. That was a scene. AP Bio was a very good show. I also, he didn't really ask a question. He just kind of...
You know what? This is a really long email where to go. I think,
Mike, I'm glad you met all these cool people. I'm glad you dated Tip O'Neill's daughter. Not really. I didn't read this. I figured there'd be a question at the end of it. He tried to drop a bunch of names cleverly. Like he went, I passed a roach clip to my friend John Leibowitz, who later had a daily show on TV. Okay.
I see. Okay, so he's being punny.
All right.
Thanks
it's
always nice, but I guess we could read that privately.
Yeah. Maybe we should cut this. Or do we leave it on the show to go, hey, don't send emails like this. Actually ask us a question.
Yeah. I listen to Sarah Silverman's podcast a lot. I think she's brilliant.
Yeah.
And a lot of people talk and ask her advice. And mm-hmm. I really would love to hear your take versus my take on advice for people. I think that would be a fun thing for people. If you had questions or you wanted advice or something, we'd love to hear those things. It's always nice to
hey guys, send what's in, going on in people's lives. Questions and you will get... you will get two sides. You'll get two lobes of a brain of Meredith and I giving you our takes on what you should do. So,
or just what's up.
Or you'll have one of us give advice. The other person will go, oh, God, do not do that. Yeah. Do not listen to what that person just said.
In other words, if you're going to write in, give us something to work with. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, don't just rattle off. And then I met this person, and then I'm okay.
Did I live next door to you?
Oh, God, I don't know. Who cares? Yeah, ask us for some direction, for some wisdom. We're full of it. All right.
Now it's time for Did You Get Our Picks?
We'll tell you what we like, what we really, really like.
Yeah, tell me what you like, what you really, really like.
Hey, let's do some quick picks, shall we? Huh?
Sure, baby.
My picks this week are actually things that I have not yet seen. I am anticipating seeing them. I haven't seen them yet. Two horror movies that have been recommended to me very, very highly, but the reviews make me very, very wary to watch them because both of the reviews, a lot of the reviews for each of these different films are in the category of really, really well-made film that I'm not sure I wanted to see. And in other words, these are apparently very, very intense films. One is a movie from a few years ago called The Dark and the Wicked that is showing on Shudder. A friend of mine, Derek Sheen, who was my opener this past weekend and a huge horror movie aficionado, said that this is the first movie in a very, very long time that genuinely frightened me. Like, really, really scared the crap out of me, and I was not expecting to be that disturbed by it. And if this guy, Derek Sheen, was disturbed by it, then I don't know if I'm in the mood right now, the way I feel about the country and everything, if I want to go down a dark hole. So there's one movie, The Dark and the Wicked, which is apparently brilliantly made and also a very hard sit, along with another movie, a new one from China, called The Sadness, which is a take on zombie/plague movies that every review I've read said oh my God, does this guy know how to shoot a horror movie? And I kind of wish he hadn't made this one. So, which again, these are very, very intriguing things to me that I know because of my mood and how I am right now, I won't be watching anytime soon. But I've heard that they're both great. They are on my list for down the road. It was, you know what it reminds me of? When that movie Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer came out, and it was the same, there was a lot of controversy about it because it's a brilliantly made movie that a lot of people said this movie should not have been made. This is a really brilliantly made but very bleak and brutal film. Although the funny thing about this movie, you'll appreciate this, Meredith, the star, then struggling Chicago actor Michael Rooker, from a small
Michael
Rooker from a small Chicago company. He and his other friends in the theater company are in this movie. The movie was shot in 1985. Couldn't find distribution, couldn't get released. But the videotape of it made its way around Hollywood for a few years because his performance is genuinely brilliant. Like, it's the kind of movie that should get an Academy Award nomination, but no one from the Academy could make it through this movie. But the videotape made its way around Hollywood, and everyone saw it and said, this guy Michael Rooker is a genius. And he started getting booked in movies like Cliffhanger and Days of Thunder, like all these big Hollywood, you know, kind of, you know, family-friendly mall-type movies. And then, after those movies came out, then Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer got distribution. So everybody that had watched him in these other movies was like, boy, your career took a weird turn, Michael. Why didn't you? Like, no, I did that like 4 years ago. That's what got me all this work. So there's something really hilarious about that, that everyone's like, hey, we kind of like you as this great character. Oh my God, what did you do?
That's so funny.
So yeah, but his performance is brilliant, and most people cannot get through that film. So there you go.
As we are recording this episode, my cat is stalking me and will not stop being near me, partly because nobody was home with her this weekend. Somebody came by just to feed her and not to snuggle her, and she's just been all up in my grill missing me. So
well, it's
I
not
think,
your cat. It's our cat. I miss our cat.
You're going to be gone a lot, and so now she's mine, baby. She's mine. She's all
God
mine.
Damn
so I'm going to go snuggle my kitten. And I really am happy we got to do this over Zoom and catch up on everything and have you guys listen. And we will have more funny, fabulous things to talk about next week. So tune in to Did You Get My Text with Meredith and Patton. And feel free to send us emails and speak pipes with like something of substance we can respond to. Okay, have a great week. Bye.
This podcast is a production of Meredith Salinger and Patton Oswalt.
In association with Starburns Audio. Executive producers are Cliff Dorfman and Jason Smith. And if you have questions for us, send them to...
Hey, did you get my text? @gmail.com. And don't forget, subscribe to this podcast. It's free, and it helps us get to keep making the show.
Starburns Audio, a podcast network.